Attention all publishers! Early bird tickets to Mumbrella Publish ends at midnight tomorrow. If you're up for a day of learning from top publishers including Broadsheet, The Bragg Media, Pro Bono, The Conversation and more, and getting the latest insights on anything and everything across the print and digital spectrum, book your tickets now before they go back up to full price. Plus, the full program has just launched. Check out all the sessions at mumbrella.com.au/publish. Hello and welcome back to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Callum Jaspin, and today, fresh off the heels of the live special on Tuesday, we're back to normal scheduling. Just the one news topic for us. We'll discuss potential industrial action at 9 as its journalists prepare to take a vote. Then I'll chat to Accenture Song's Australian lead and also co-founder and CEO of The Monkees, Mark Green, about this year's rebrand and sort of everything that comes under his umbrella. But first, joining me today is Acting Deputy Editor Emma Shepherd. Em, welcome, and how's it going?
It's going great. It's good to be back on the pod.
It's good to have you back. And how was your first 360 experience last week? I know we're all still coming down from that a bit.
Oh, it was so great. I love just being amongst the action. Nothing like a live event and seeing people in person, and such a great 2 days for networking. So it was a blast. What about you? Did you like it?
Oh, it was great. It was a little bit stressful at times. You know, we obviously had our own stuff to do as well. The stories aren't going to write themselves, but you know, as you say, it was a fantastic opportunity and great to see everyone there. So, Em, straight into it, James Chesil, Managing Director of Nine Publishing, sent out an email this week on the Enterprise Bargaining Agreement. Can you start by taking us through a brief overview of this story, how we got to this point, and roughly what was in the content of that email there?
Yeah, definitely. So I'll start off from the beginning just before I get into James's response. So basically the MEAA and Nine Publishing have been negotiating for a number of months and renegotiating the enterprise agreement covering media workers at SMH, The Age, AFR, Brisbane Times and WA Today. So MEAA members are kind of working for a fair pay rise and improved grading to ensure diversity in the newsroom, minimum standards of freelancers and a public commitment to the charter of editorial independence, amongst other things. And the main ones were, you know, in terms of the wages, MEAA members are seeking kind of a combination of wage increases ranging from 5.5% per annum to 4% per annum, weighted toward, toward staff on lower pay for 3 years, and automatic classification grading increases to ensure there are real wage gains. And then also management is offering 3.5% for lower graded staff and 3% for higher graded staff for a 1 year agreement. So look, they're trying to get a little bit more money, but with the inflation and with the kind of overall climate at the moment coming back after the pandemic with publishing, look, we have heard back a response from James Chesil, and he hasn't really been in favor of, you know, what the journalists are wanting and what MEAA are wanting as well. And for the central issue being, he said, the size and duration of the new pay deal. So there remains a gap between both sides at the moment. The offer presented to employees by Nine, Chesil said, which was that 3.5% increase to graded rates for staff below the merit threshold and a 3% increase to graded rates for staff above, is a significant investment by Nine. And he said it compares favourably to increases being offered by their competitors. And he did note some negative impacts as well for the company, some being substantial increases in paper costs have been well documented and are forecast now to worsen. You know, the same is true for transport and distribution costs. You know, there's defamation costs that remain uncertain. He even said, you know, Google and Facebook money is welcome and is one of several factors, including strong underlying business performance that, you know, allowed them to hire more than 50 new journalists. You know, but however, during the, you know, the course of the deals, it makes up for legacy revenue streams that are in structural decline, you know, print subs, print retail, print advertising, for example.
Yeah, I mean, as I understand it, the last time that the enterprise agreement came up, it was carried over during COVID, and from all accounts, I think everyone was pretty happy with that because of, I guess, the uncertainty that came at that time. Obviously, the journalists, the majority of which are part of the MAAA, as you say, obviously got job security out of that, and Nine didn't have to raise their wages. This is the first time I think that the Nine management has had to negotiate this deal since that merger with Fairfax. And again, you know, you kind of hear around the traps and industry sources kind of suggest that I think a lot of the Nine journalists are sort of asking, since Nine has received quite a bit of money, a substantial amount coming in from Google and Facebook through some of these deals they've agreed over the years, sort of asking, where is it going? We're yet to sort of see it. And that 3.5% number that you raised there, I know businesses quite a lot of businesses locally in Australia have actually raised staff standards for wages due to inflation, or I guess in line with inflation, seeing as the cost of living is going up. So I think what's happening here is, you know, you're getting the union kind of doing what it's meant to do, I guess, serving its members, and then you've got Nine, who also probably are going to stand quite firm, as you'd imagine here. So what happens next here, Em? Say, you know, we do have this vote, which will be this week. Is there been a response from the MAAA? And if, you know, Nine's journalists do decide to walk out, which they very well could, what happens then?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm pretty sure that, well, I'm not pretty sure, but I know that our MEAA members, I think that's 90% of Nine journos make up for that. So I'd feel that if this goes through, it's going to get passed and approved. But look, I spoke to MEAA and I had a bit of background on it. You know, obviously there is going to be, in recent weeks, members, you know, elected to take those steps forward to kind of go and protect industrial action through, you know, the union. So they have been lodging a protected action ballot with them. That was approved last week. Now ballots will be sent out to members this week, and they should receive these ballots next week. So members then need to vote on the types of industrial action that they wish to take. There was a fair few options that they could have selected, but the union is really urging its members to vote yes to every question. And it is expected the union and management will still meet during the period prior to the ballot being closed to continue the enterprise agreement discussions too.
Yeah, it's I think it will be fascinating to see how I guess this dynamic plays out, because then you're kind of speaking to a few people, they would remind you that Fairfax's journalists have previously walked out when that agreement maybe wasn't reached, but now Nine, it's a different game. They've probably got as some may say, stronger resolve, but again, if they were to decide to walk out, you could probably point to that deal which the AAP, headed up by former SMH editor Lisa Davies, and the publisher signed just recently, and you can listen to Lisa talking about that on the Mumbrella Cast a few months ago. Em, you spoke more directly to the MAAA's director, Adam Portelli. What did he have to say?
Yeah, that was a good chat with Adam. Always, you know, great to jump on the phone with him, and he's always willing to have a good chat. But basically, he let me know, you know, he wanted to give his view on what's going on, and on record, of course. But he said, despite journos working harder than ever, cost of living pressures are increasing, which is not surprising for anyone. And huge payouts from Google and Facebook, Nine management are still offering insufficient pay increases and no guaranteed minimums for freelancers. And then he said, with inflation now running, as you said before, 6.1%, Nine management has to do better. And he said, all workers Nine engages deserve respect and a level of job security, including freelance journalists as well. So he's all for them winning this and you know, everyone saying
as you would expect him to be, I think.
Absolutely. Yes. So he's wouldn't expect anything less.
And just for a final note, we did approach Nine for comment, and there's not going to be anything coming out there for now. Anyway, moving on. Next up, we have Accenture Song and the Monkees, Mark Green. So Mark Green, co-founder and CEO of the Monkees, as well as lead for ANZ for Accenture Song. How are you, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Looking forward to having a good chat. How's everything going?
Yeah, everything's very well down here. The rain has settled, so it's good weather to crack on with it. So nice. Earlier this year, Accenture Interactive rebranded to Accenture Song, in David Droger's words, to symbolize the post-pandemic growth journey that we're on with clients. Can you start by sort of, I guess, for us in the local market, crystallizing what that means here and how things have really changed?
Yeah, look, I think locally we've been on the path or the future trajectory for where Accenture Song is now heading. So Accenture Song is all around growth and helping clients navigate the warp speed that technology is bringing to every business by helping them, I guess, strategically set up their growth journey, define their kind of purpose and strategy, and then help them navigate the changes from everything from product and service design, from commerce and content, from modern marketing. And, you know, look, I think Song is really set up to try and deliver that group of capabilities and really help, I guess, the clients and the teams within the business to kind of unite around that purpose and to just really be that sort of, you know, sustainable growth partner for clients.
Is it a bit of one of those cases where, you know, I guess for a client, you can be very clear on what your proposition is internally, but they may think, if I don't know what that is, then how are they going to help us figure out where we're going?
Yeah, look, I, and again, you know, I mean, we're pretty nerdy from a strategic standpoint locally, and we've got a very strong strategy department. So we've always been really clear as to what we stand for, be it Accenture Interactive or Accenture Song. And I think for as the business has evolved and as the market and landscape has changed, I think that proposition needed a bit of a refresh, and that's what Song has delivered. And I think, and it's also kind of just uniting the globe on a mission behind it. So, you know, and it's great for us because we've got a great connection with Dave Droger, obviously being an Australian. But aside from that, yeah. We've known each other for a long time. And I think, you know, with him stepping into the leadership role at a global level, I think, that just gives it a new kind of momentum and a new energy. And I think that's what we're all getting behind locally as well.
So you mentioned Droger there and that relationship, and part of it was consolidating all those brands. And obviously from a local perspective, the Monkees being such a household name for the last few years, can you sort of talk about, with that brand remaining, what the sort of strategic direction with this consolidation is, and I guess the plans for the Monkees moving forward?
Yeah, look, I think the Monkees as part of Accenture Song is, you know, if we're setting the agenda around growth and helping clients navigate that journey, there's some key capabilities required to deliver that, and the Monkees' role within Accenture Song is really about setting up that idea of purpose and brand strategy and then delivering modern marketing in the best way possible, which is pretty consistent for what we've done over the course of our 16, 17 years, with a purpose around making provocative ideas happen. Look, I think that remains, but I think what is becoming really interesting for the team is that beyond just thinking employing creativity to solve marketing and advertising related issues. We're actually using creativity to inform, you know, new product ideas, new services, new experiences on behalf of brands. So working with the whole of Accenture Song, putting that to bear where, you know, you can sort of reimagine industries, you can reimagine services. And, you know, a couple of examples of that are, you know, trying to bring dementia sufferers and their carers together through technology and creativity to kind of bring them back into the room through triggers. Another example would be to, you know, to create an army of CPR trained first responders to help bridge the gap between a cardiac arrest and an ambulance arriving. So there's ideas like that that I think [S2] Yeah. [S1] Kind of change the game. And I think that's really exciting for the team. And I think if you've kind of followed the journey of the Monkey since its inception, we've always believed that creativity can play a far bigger role in influencing business and society. And I think that's what Accenture Song allows the Monkeys and all the agencies that have been part of Accenture Song globally to navigate. And I think that's what's really been the attraction, and that's why we did it 5 years ago. So I think for us, it's really kind of crystallizing that agenda, bringing the opportunity closer, and also kind of really just providing a bigger platform for the business. And I think that's what's exciting. And I think that's why, you know, we continue to grow. The team's expanding across, you know, Melbourne, Sydney and Auckland now. And, yeah, it's exciting. I think there's, you know, with all of these kind of things, there's the cynical view, which, you know, whether you like the name or don't is one thing. But I think there's also the optimistic kind of lean into it and yeah. embrace what it can be. And I think for us, you know, that has always been about that combination of creativity, consulting and technology coming together. And I think that's still the mission. So for us, it's really, you know, we always like to say well done is better than well said, and it's the proof is in the pudding. And I think for us, we'll demonstrate that by, you know, just doing more interesting things with our clients. And I think that's what that's the journey we're on. And I think that proposition is really different from other agencies, and it's different from holding companies and also other consultancies as well. So I think, you know, we've got a really great opportunity to be something demonstrably different. And I think that's you know, we've the industry needs some change, and it needs some, you know, people that are going to bet on different ways of navigating this world, and that's ours. And, you know, so far we've been joined by some pretty stellar talent across the globe, and the growth of the business has been really super strong. So all those things together mean that, you know, something is really working, and
yeah,
you know, we're still able to attract the best talent. You know, I think within the team that we've got in ANZ, it's a real force. And I say that with all respect to kind of the competitors we face, but, you know, we're trying to do something different. We're not trying to copy something that's been done before. And within all of that, there's that healthy tension. And there's also, you know, challenges. So on a good day, you're in full flight. And on a bad day, you're kind of, you know, grinding through the gears a little bit, trying to navigate something new. So but, you know, look, we've done that forever, you know, whether it's learning how to create a television show through to, you know, a music video through to whatever it might be, a new product to launch into a market that we've created, for example, like, you know, Mood Tea for Unlimited. I think we've always pushed the boundaries of what an answer could look like. And I think that's what gets us up out of bed every day, and why, whilst we've, you know, I've been on this journey for 16 years, it always feels new. And every kind of 12 to 18 months, you really want to sort of challenge yourself to work out what's next, because, you know, you can't stand still.
Yeah. And, you know, I think as you say there, it sort of seems like a natural progression. And I think there is one consistency there, which is, as you say, with the monkeys always trying to create innovative and kind of, I guess, groundbreaking ideas at the heart of the work. I would ask, do you think it's maybe just immediately compare the monkeys because they have this tradition, sorry, this history as a more traditional agency in the sense of being an agency, and then kind of how that is developing into the consultancy space? Do you think it's a bit of a cop out for people to always just try and pigeonhole the company?
I've never felt like we've ever had any issue with the perception of, you know, how we've navigated this. I think the best sign of success is continued growth, to continue to attract the best talent, and do interesting work that always feels like, you know, the work in front of you is better than the work behind you. And that's kind of how it's felt. I think labels are just labels. I think at the end of the day, I think the work we've done has transcended what is typically delivered from an advertising agency from day one. And I think what we're going to do with Accenture Song is actually take that to another level, where we're, you know, really going to be able to, through creativity, technology, consulting, all of those great things that we have in our team, we'll be able to reimagine different opportunities for businesses. And I think, I think there's a, just rather than doing a better ad than the next guy, this is actually a bit more of a transformation. And, you know, I use that word recognizing that it's thrown around a lot in our industry. And I'm not big on, smoke machines and all of that type of stuff with how I talk about the business. Again, we like to prove it out. But within Accenture Song right now, I mentioned a couple of the things that we're working on earlier, but there's the diversity of what is happening, and we're learning everyone's learning from each other, right? Because, you know, when you kind of, if you're a product and service designer, that's very different to being a brand designer, very different from being a solution architect or an engineer in the commerce and content team. If you're a MarTech professional, very different from being a brand strategist. And I think there's that can be quite intimidating, right? When you've got all these quite eclectic, different types of people within the organization, but you put a problem in front of that group of people and all those nuances disappear and everyone just gets focused on what problem has to be solved for a client. And you kind of go, holy shit, this is next level.
Yeah.
it's really interesting. And it's not, as we've said, it's not, you're not kind of perfecting, you know, the 30-second commercial here. You're actually cutting new ground and doing something that everybody is a little bit in awe of. And I think that has really been the reality of a lot of the types of projects that we're now finding ourselves tackling. And I think that's different for the consulting industry. It's different from the advertising industry. So you've really got a whole bunch of different skills and industries coming together and cultures as well, right? They are different cultures. And I think, again, you've just got to be open-minded with how you walk into the room. But the thing that we are constantly seeing is that we're surprised by the depth of solution that we can come up with. And, you know, there's some big projects that we're working on that, the breadth of what we're offering, bringing together kind of brand, purpose, experience, technology, and operations to run a business. And that's really interesting. And it keeps it new, it keeps it fresh. And for people from the industries that we navigate, I think that's a pretty good day job.
Yeah. It's funny. I did a live podcast last week at Mumbrella 360 with Nick Garrett from Deloitte Digital and Mim Haysom from Suncorp, and kind of listening back to the conversation when I was editing it earlier this week, it was a good runway for this chat, because there was quite a few points that I figured, oh, you know, that would be a good one to ask Mark. A big part of the conversation was sort of about the increasingly complex role of a chief marketing officer, and how, you know, as you mentioned, it's not just about the 30-second ad anymore. It's about kind of taking things upstream, sometimes even beyond the marketing department. Do you think, I guess, you're perfectly poised for that right now? And I guess kind of following on that, it's quite interesting. I mean, the Coles pitch is obviously very imminent, but it appears, not that we can talk about the result of that, because that is yet to come, but it feels sort of a watershed moment where you do have these traditional advertising holding groups, and then on the other hand, you've got this Accenture Song solution, which it's sort of like a clashing of these two big kind of touch points that we've been talking about for so many years.
Yeah, there's a few bits to that comment. Firstly, Mim and Nick, two of the, you know, great people of our industry that have a great perspective on all of this. And yeah, look, the role of the marketer is changing, and its influence, given the changing nature of the customer, you know, marketing is becoming increasingly important. And I think we're seeing that reporting line straight into the CEO more and more. And when you talk about growth and the marketing department being kind of the catalyst for working out how to grow, that's a lot of responsibility. And, you know, the things that, you know, marketing at one point became probably more marketing communications. But if you roll out the four P's, you've kind of, you know, in a traditional sense, which isn't the whole breadth of a marketing offer. But if you're adding product and price and promotion and distribution and things like that, with technology change in this landscape, then you've got, you know, you're sitting across a lot of different factors and different ways and different businesses to kind of navigate. And, you know, look, I know Mim faces that challenge. And most CMOs that we talk to, we had about 12 in a session last night, talking about value creation and growth, and they're all facing the same sort of challenge. So, what are they looking for? It's changing. Is Accenture Song an answer? Yeah, like it really is, because you know you can't do it with one or two people, and you have to be deep in your capabilities. So when you're talking about marketing technology, you need to understand it. You need to be able to kind of strategically deliver a program of work for a client. And likewise with e-commerce and modern marketing. And they're different people that are required to do that. So the scale of an organization to be able to do that end-to-end service for a marketer is pretty significant. So that's why we feel being, you know, Accenture Song is really well placed, because we've got that breadth of services. And the Coles pitch is an example of us putting that together. So whether it's a clash or whatever it's described as in this moment of time, I think it's just we're all putting forward our best bet on how to deliver an answer. And, you know, we're confident with our approach, and whether it's the Coles pitch or any other conversation with a client, I think you know, we're backing the narrative and the story that we're putting out in the market, and it's exciting because we've got great people to deliver it. And culturally, I think we're really uniting a really smart group of people that are down to earth, and you know, confident in their ability and have experience to do that, to navigate that challenge for clients. And I think, it's exciting, and that pitch is just one of another example of, you know, how it's being put to test by clients.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll obviously talk about the result of that in due course. I'm sure a lot of will be said about that when it does come out. Did they, when they sort of, I guess, approached you in the first place, did they have any idea, or was it of what they maybe wanted to see from that Accenture Song solution, or was it sort of like a, you know, show us what you can do?
I'll ignore the question and skirt around it because I probably can't answer it directly
fair enough.
Goals pitch, but I think most clients are coming to businesses trying to find out ways that their capabilities can help their company, and most of the conversations we're having with clients are of that nature. Now we will pitch the whole idea of what we can do. Clients won't always want to buy that from one company. They may choose to talk to a few, and we're okay with either of those approaches, right? Because we back our capability collectively, but we also know if it's a very narrow task, like we don't want to boil the ocean and just try and shove the whole thing down the throat of a client, because that's not what they're asking for. So, it's one of those horses for courses a little bit. But we think we're at our best when we bring, more than one or two of the capabilities we have together for a client, because that's where we can actually really drive sales and growth and more accountability to that client. So, yeah, that's probably gives you a bit of insight in terms of how we're thinking about it.
Yeah. On a sort of more personal, professional note, the Monkees are up for Mumbrella's Creative Agency of the Year next week. You're also up against, in the same category, last year's winner, Thinkabell. Last year, after Thinkabell took home that prize, Margie Reed and Adam Ferrier on the podcast, and they spoke about their relationship with PwC, who have an investment in that agency. And they sort of said when that came about, I guess what was really appealing was that having the connection with a company like PwC opened up doors to maybe, I think the term what they used was parties, that they wouldn't have previously been invited to. Has that sort of been something that you've found quite different since the involvement with Accenture in 2017?
It's definitely opened up a whole new range of possibilities for everybody within the team, both personally and professionally. I've seen my role from a scrappy 3-person startup to running Accenture Song across all these different capabilities, and it's very much a global business. So we are working on assignments throughout the region as well, and then also connecting with a global strategy as well. So that's a whole new experience. And I think for everybody in our team, that just opens up doors. We'd often lose a lot of people to different firms like Droga or Wyden or could be Silverstein or Mother or whoever it might be. And, so now our team have got options to go overseas as well. And I think that's also been great from being able to hold on to some of our restless talent that, want to test themselves on a world stage. So we're getting those cross-border, career opportunities and clients as well, right? Like I think that we've had some pretty amazing briefs from overseas that looking at the insurance industry in a different way or the banking industry and using technology from global to solve a problem like the deterioration of the Great Barrier Reef. With a reef cloud program of work that we've been working on. So it has definitely opened up many more party opportunities for the team, if that's how we want to call it.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's like, I think that's, that there's so many advantages from being an independent and being your own kind of firm and a private company and all of those things. And conversely, there are also great things from being part of a truly global business.
Yeah, it's sort of staying on the sort of broader area of awards there. It was interesting. Another panel I was involved in at Mumbrella 360, we had on stage Nine's Michael Stevenson, Spark Foundry's Imogen Hewitt, and Westpac Group's Carly Boyle. And one of the questions that I posed to them was, aside from Mumbrella's awards, obviously, which do you think is the best kind of marker of success or the most valuable by clients? And there was sort of unity on the Effies as being sort of the benchmark. Last year, the Monkees were named as Effective Agency of the Year, as well as scooping up the Grand Effie for, I believe it was a campaign with NRMA, the HELP campaign. I'd be interested to hear from your perspective what you think this kind of the not the winning formula in terms of actually just winning awards, but sort of what the formula for that has been, which has resulted in that recognition.
Yeah, look, I think we use the saying smart enough to play the game, dumb enough to think it matters when it comes to awards. They're part of the industry, and everyone likes winning them, us included. The Effies we do see as the probably the most important, because it's about effectiveness and it's the most valuable award for clients. So, in my role as the chairman of the Advertising Council of Australia, the ACA put on the Effies, and the last few years they've been as strong as they have ever been. And I think there's a real focus on the Effies from agencies and clients alike, and there's a lot of prestige and excitement when you can win them. And we've been very fortunate the last 2 years to be the most effective agency in Australia. I think that would probably be the standout. Creative awards also, I think they attract talent. They kind of put your work on a global stage. So we were always interested in making sure that, the work we do is world-class. And yeah, look, I think it's part of our industry. There's, arguments that there are probably too many. I think I think you've got to be part of it, and the staff love it as well, and the clients love working with an award-winning agency.
And everyone likes to celebrate something.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's over the last few years there haven't been enough opportunities for everybody to come together. I think your event next week should be well attended and enjoyed by many.
Well, let's hope so. And I'll do a quick shout out for that next week. I'm sure if you've not sorted yourself a ticket, you can still get one. So I hope to see you there. One of these kind of touch points that we've sort of spoken about quite a lot today already is sort of having innovation and provocative ideas at the heart of what the Monkees has been since you founded it, as you said, 16 years ago. First of all, do you think that has been, I guess, the main driver for the success of the agency over the years? And I know we kind of spoke about this, before the podcast, and we sort of spoke about the cultural aspect about that. Do you think that the culture is driving the innovation, or having innovation at the heart of the agency is sort of a driving point for the culture within it?
I think it's a bit of both. I think that the more you step outside your comfort zone, the more thrilling a business you operate. And the thing that we love about Accenture Song and the Monkees and what people are attracted to is the idea of doing something you haven't done before. And I think if you set that, as a benchmark for the type of work you want to do, I think clients will become attracted to it. And So we've always kind of found ourselves doing new things, things that have, you know, meant that we're learning how to do, you know, something for the first time in some instances. And I think that kind of creates quite a culture of, exciting projects, exciting clients, brave clients, challenging clients, restless clients that kind of, you know, want to push the envelope and do something different. And I think if the culture that comes as a consequence of that, you know, if that's what you're leading by example and showing the way, then I think that really helps to define the culture. And there's an expectation if you are part of Accenture Song or the Monkeys, you're like kind of at the edge of where you could take that. And, you know, we want to make sure that that continues. You know, we're not a small business. We are a significant business. So, you know, you kind of just, you always want to make sure that you're learning and developing the work that you're doing. And we've found that, you know, when we've been in, you know, whether it's an app or a TV show or whatever it might be, you're starting to, you're orbiting different types of industries and different people. And every time you have an experience like that, you can take it on to the next project. And, you know, that's our thirst for, you know, being innovative and doing new things has, it's really been kind of a catalyst for the culture that we've always created. And, you know, we talk about the work all the time. And that's what, you know, has really attracted most clients that we've worked with over the years and kept them as well.
And, Just finally, Mark, sort of on a, again, on a sort of personal level, is there a particular type of brief or anything like that that really inspires you or has inspired you over the years?
Yeah, look, I always see the potential in almost any brief. You know, the best brief is the one in front of you right now, because how you can answer that is, in so many different ways today. You know, there's the fragmentation of media and, you know, the connection, different connections of businesses and customers and, you know, the world's changing. There's kind of all these challenges in every level through technology or societal change. So there's just so many ways you can answer a different brief. So, look, I it's more... less about the brief sometimes, it's more about the people around the brief, clients that are open-minded and willing to kind of, you know, build on ideas and take them to the next level, because you can't get there alone. Like it's a real team collaboration, and I think clients and agencies get the work that they deserve. That's been thrown around a few times I've heard throughout my career, and I think it's true. But it's also, you know, there's no happenstance that some businesses get to great ideas more often than not, because there's a culture around it. And I think there's that kind of burning optimism and kind of relentless energy required to keep doing it year after year. And I think that's one of the things that we're most proud of, is that we've always found those ways over 16 years. And throughout all of our careers in doing that consistently. And, you know, Mumbrella Agency of the Year things are kind of, you know, I mean, I think we've been a finalist every year you've done it, and we've won a few. And I think that's the way we approach it, is to kind of always be amongst the best and just to keep reinventing ourselves and doing great work. And any brief, you kind of, when I first started in the industry, you know, you know, some of the briefs that no one wanted to work on, we turned into these great opportunities. So I've always had that mindset since the beginning, and a little bit addicted to it, I guess.
I think that's a good thing at this stage. So, well,
or a sad thing, depending on how you look at it.
I was going to say it depends on how you look at it. So,
yeah.
Well, best of luck for next week. I'll see you there, and thanks for joining me today.
No worries. Thanks for having me. I'll see you next week.
Well, that is it for another week here on the Mumbrella Cast. Thanks for sticking with us for a bumper week here. Please make sure you're subscribed on your favorite podcast platform and check out mumbrella.com.au for all the content and updates that you need. Em, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Cal. Always a pleasure.
And thanks again to Mark as well. We'll see you next week.